This evening, I just wanted to cover a few things. If you could have a question or a title, I put down here, Who Me? I'm Not Proud. And we've talked about humility and pride before, and I just was sensing that the Lord wanted us to review some things, some of the hubris that we see in our politicians and some of the people that are out there, people we work with and stuff like that. We just kind of need to understand what God's telling us to do in a life in the Lord. So humility, true humility, would admit that but for God's grace, there go I. We could have, when you stop and think of it, just but for a few twists and turns in our life that didn't happen, but if they did happen, we could also be that drug addict or alcoholic or bank robber or unfaithful spouse or any number of things. So always keep that in mind. Not that God makes people do those things, but those twists of fate and et cetera, all the things that go on, decisions that were made, you know, but for the grace of God, you could be that. So don't come against too many people. When you see those that are in that terrible struggle, we have a commitment from the Lord to pray for them, to be the prayer cover they may never have had. Mm-hmm. I remember years and years ago, the Lord showed me, and I have no way to prove this, you know, but that that when I was in the womb, my mom's womb, that some of my aunts, and most of them are all gone, they were praying for me. And I remember when I was in the military and not living a life unto the Lord. I didn't come to the Lord and give my heart to Him until I was 30. And I was out there jumping and running around. One of the med techs prayed for me for all those years that I would work as hard for the Lord as I was against Him. And he lived to see my heart converted to the Lord. So, I mean, it's very powerful. Sometimes you will see that, and sometimes you won't. You just use a God along someone's journey. But keep that humility in your heart, and it has to be coming from the Lord. Now, humility doesn't mean that you hang your head down, you walk around like, you know, you don't know what's happening, or, you know, being a doormat for everybody. That's not what God's talking about. Humility, and we've covered this before, it just means that you know the gifts that you have, but you know they came from God. You're not out there boasting how much better you are at something or whatever. If God has given us gifts, and He doesn't give everybody the same gifts, and anyone who's had children, you can have five kids, they're all different. Same mom, same dad, same house, same bringing up, same everything, but they're all kind of uniquely different. They all have their own gifts. We have a leadership team here, all unique, all heading in the same direction toward the Lord, but each one brings something that the other one doesn't have. So no one is standing up, the big poobah. The big poobah is the Lord. And humility will allow you to work together, knowing that you are not above the other. Each one brings their unique gifts. You can't have what they have, and they can't have what you have. God intended it to work together. A cord of many strands is not easily broken. And those that slip away and stand on their own and go whatever, usually lose a lot because their flesh won't be challenged by others around them. And they can still serve the Lord, but it's going to be difficult. God uses all of us to humble each other. It means they get aggravated when that happens. But He's using some of the things that happen in our relationships to humble us. And God has used some unique things in my life. God has gifted me. He's gifted me with teaching and doing different things along that line. And I know I was just full of myself when I was up... I had my life plan, you know, teaching at the college, and I could smell my office at USF. I mean, I knew where I was heading, and, you know, God didn't give me a hint. I'm so glad, because I would have gone, no! But I was just full of myself, and I can just remember that. I can remember being in my lab coat, walking across the campus, my briefcase. I had a secretary, my own office, and I'm going, I love this job! And the minute I said that, I went, ooh, wait a minute now. Don't take it away. I mean, like, I really like it, but, like, you know, I was trying to fool God, but He knew I was just full of myself. And most of you know that story. Took that job away, ended up cleaning toilets and mowing lawns for about 6 years, but God told me later it was to humble me. Now, I would suggest you try and do it the easy way. But if you don't, God will increase pressure a little bit, Because he doesn't want us full of ourselves. He wants us full of him. Because he's holy and he's pure and he's going to do it perfectly right. And what I understood too, humility is a protection against pride. Because pride comes before the fall. Pride needs to be chastened. That's why God says to come humbly before him. You're not God. He is. Yet if you're strong, yet if you're gifted, yet if you're successful, you can be your own God and not even realize it. You have to go back and be refreshed before him. He is above all. He is unique. He is wonderful. He is glorious. And because he's so kind to us and has so much grace and doesn't crush us the minute we do anything stupid and incorrect and full of pride, we kind of think it's okay, and it's not. Now, he'll get you if you get too high on your horse, but don't go there. Stay humble before the Lord. If we're heavy with God's nature, we'll be lowly of heart and humble. So the heaviness needs to be all that wonderful grace. It will help to keep us down instead of carrying on. When you realize that God has been kind to you and showered you with grace and really, for some of us, kept us from some of the worst things. I was right on the edge of alcoholism when I came back from Vietnam and was dealing with a lot of things. I was drinking far too much. The adversary saw it. Alcoholism runs in my family. I was very close. I can remember the day. I'm not going to go into the story right now. But that day, if I hadn't made that decision, I would have jumped into alcoholism. I would have been a totally different person. I might have been under an overpass. I would have lost nursing. I would have lost everything. God knows if I had a DUI or anything. God knows. But he did something to me because he has a plan, you see. He wanted me to do what I'm doing now, and I couldn't if I did that back then. So he never stopped me, but he can put that circumstance, he can put that thing that helps us to make the right decisions. But he'll never force himself on us. Free will has to be here. Free will has to be in the mix, or else there is no perfect justice. Because unless you have the choice to choose, there is no perfect justice. He cannot say, you have remained unclean by your choice, even though I have called you and wooed you and called you and called you and called you. You can't be in my presence. That would not happen if you did not have a free will. I was going over some things. Some of the older writers, the Spurgeon. I don't want to say older writers because I write and I'm old, but you know what I'm saying. Charles Spurgeon is a noted preacher, and he really was able to pen some of the things that those of us later could read what God's Spirit was showing him. And he said something, if you and I empty ourselves, depend on it, God will fill us. If you say, God, forgive me, I don't want to be me. I tell people all the time, your best day with me is when I'm not me. Because I have a background. You know, there's a culture, and there's ethnic influences, and there's religious influences, and things that I was brought up in, and all that I was around, and peers, and family, and stuff that does influence you. And unless it's directly coming from the throne of God, it's not a correct influence. So you have to empty yourself. Say, God, I don't even know what parts of me are wrong. I mean, that's what you have to humble yourself against. I know, I'm fine. I don't even know what's wrong, God. I don't know what I picked up that's incorrect. I need to hear you. I need to hear your truth. And I give you my heart open. You fill it. You fill me with you. And that's an attitude that we need to maintain. And when we don't, we got to go back and get refreshed to do it. He says, if you empty yourselves, depend on it, God will fill you. So you will not be void. You will not be empty. When you put yourself away, when you crucify the flesh, the only other thing left for God's children is to have him fill up that void. Spurgeon goes on and says, he encourages us, he says, make a vacuum in there by humility so that God can fill that vacuum with his love. Our love is limited. Just have a husband and wife get into an argument about something really fiercely. You know, say, whoa, man, where's the love? And God isn't talking about that, you know, holding hands, running through Waikiki love. He's talking about what he said love was. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is long-suffering. Love doesn't brag. Doesn't hold a wrong against the other. Oh my God, the list goes on. I go, I'm stopped at patience. I haven't even got to the others yet. I'm still working on this one. But God's kind of love comes with all that, so I don't need to worry about working on all that. I just need to get rid of me, and all that's going to come in. It will be the right answer. It will be the right attitude. It will be the right viewpoint. It will be the right decision. I mean, this thing is so stinking simple, and religion has complicated it, and using your broken thinker from Adam complicates it. Your broken wanter and feeler complicates it. So you got to die to self. And you're not left just a dead puddle somewhere. When you're dead to self, guess what's alive? God's children have God alive in there. His spirit, his power, his wisdom. It's so powerful. And this is another thing. People say, well, oh, God doesn't love me, and God can't forgive me, and I can't forgive them, and all this gyration that goes on, the drama, please. Over all the years in ministry, I think God's given me all sorts of people in need and stuff like that that come across my path, because every one of us are in training. But I see so many times they have such a wrong attitude about God. They think he's some monster up there ready to crush them. Spurgeon says, our Lord never crushed a soul yet that lay prostrate at his feet. Prostate. I'm a nurse. It comes out the wrong way. Hello. It always comes out prostate. Oh, well, whatever. Those listening online, just hang in there. We're getting back on target. Our Lord never crushed a soul that lay prostrate at his feet, and he never will. Stop and think of it. And sometimes I tell people, this is not a spiritual rule, but sometimes you got to get down on your knees, and sometimes you got to get down on your face before God. Say, God, I am down as low as I can. If I could get under the boards of my house, I would. I need you. Help me, Lord, not to be me. Forgive me of my sin. Forgive me of my ways that are stuck in me for whatever reasons. I repent. You do that a number of times a day. You're going to be having that void of you filled with him. And God will never crush you. Come to him. He loves you. I just said that just a little while ago to someone. They said, well, I just don't believe, like, yeah, I don't trust, I don't think God's going to do this. I mean, yada, yada. Wow. All God wants to do is love you. Just go to him. He doesn't want to punish you. He doesn't want to cream you. He knows you're born handicapped. Just run to him. He wants to comfort you. He wants to make your situations better. But if you keep sticking your finger in his eye and go, I don't believe you. I don't think you can do it. God still won't crush you. But you ain't getting the keys to the car, so to speak. You know, your attitude stinks. As parents, you all know that. Kid comes to you and well, okay, you're not going there. I got the power, honey. Got the money, got the keys. You ain't going nowhere. You don't hate them. You don't throw them away. God doesn't hate us and throw us away. But you don't even get the fullness of all of his blessings when you're a whining, complaining child. He still loves you. You're still clean, but you're a mess. Don't do that. Just go humbly. Lay prostrate before the Lord. And then Spurgeon went on to say, I believe every Christian person has a choice between being humble and being humbled. When I was choosing pride, either purposely or inadvertently, then I had to be humbled. I'd rather go to the Lord quietly and humbly and have him work through me. But he'll do it either way. Now the scriptures give us some instructions for humility in Colossians 3:12. These scriptures just cover me. They wrap around me like a blanket. I hope they do the same thing to you. Colossians 3:12, it says, and so, as those who've been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion and kindness, and look at the word that's in there, humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another, forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, and he clarifies this, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Whoa. You already said, chosen, holy, beloved. God's talking to us. Chosen, holy, beloved. So the next time you're ready to rip your husband's head off or your wife's head off, she is chosen, he is chosen, she is holy, he is holy, she is beloved, he is beloved. You touch in the wrong territory, and God's up there watching this now, so be really careful. Back it down. And don't just say, well, that's just me, it's my personality. God says, I know, you got to get rid of that. That's not holy. It's not the right response, it's not the God response one to another. And when the person's dead wrong, you don't have any right to punish them and carry on. That's God's business with them. Your talking is never going to change a soul, but speaking by the Spirit of God is going to convict their heart. And God says, be slow to speak. We have knee-jerk speak. And how many times when we're hurt, and someone says something, that like anything you've not forgiven him for is going to come out. And then you said this, and then you did that. Oh, the flood is coming. You did, you said, you did, you said, you did, you said. You're just reconfirming anger and unforgiveness and pride. I'm more important than you. We don't even realize that Pandora's box that we open up with unforgiveness, with anger. And the adversary knows it. Oh, he says, every one of us knows when that dragon starts getting ready to throw that flame out of your mouth. God says, destroy it right there. Do not let that happen. Don't address their wrongness. Be quiet. Be still before God. If he has you say something, it'll be godly. If not, that's his business. And let him continue to do it. Put on all of those things. And when he says to put on, you see that things jump out at me. English teachers would know this, you know. These are verbs. This is action verbs. He's not describing a thing. He's not giving you a name, a noun. This is an active life in God. So much, he says. He says to fight. And he says to do. He says, don't just be a hearer of the word. Be a doer of the word. He says to put on. That means it's something that you have to do. You have to be aware, and you have to do it. Now, you can't put this on the shelf. It's good to read the scriptures and fill your soul and your heart with it, but you have to do it. And you can't do it unless God brings some uncomfortable stuff for you to practice. There's no way you're going to love the unlovable until what? You got some what? Unlovables. I remember years ago, I said, God, all the wackos on earth, what, they follow me around like a puppy? And he clearly said to me, how are you going to learn to love the unlovable unless I have them, he didn't say up my nose, but unless I have them right there intertwined in things you're going to have to deal with. It's easy to love the lovable. The heathen do that. I'm a sociable, kind person. I have a natural compassion and affinity to be gregarious, etc. Mouthy, my family said. But that's not God's love. That's not what God's talking about. So this doing is something that's so important. And when he says to forgive, I know a lot of people, they said, I've forgiven, but I can't forget. Well, then you haven't forgiven. Now, it doesn't mean that the circumstance didn't happen. It's real. There are facts that are never going to change. That did happen. But the burden you carry for anger, remorse, the need for punishment, the need for God to slam down on them, that's eating you up. God says forgiveness means you give up your right to punish them. Wow. But the humble soul, Jesus gave up his right to punish. I mean, just stop thinking of it now. They were spitting his face and doing all this stuff. He could have just stood up, raised one hand and said, be dead, be done, be gone. Earth, open up, swallow them whole. And he didn't. Jesus was the example. He gave up his right to punish those that were coming against him, laughing, mocking, scoffing, laughing, and actually piercing him. He gave up his right to punish them because God has a plan. And what were his last words practically? Father, forgive them. And he didn't leave the period there. Why did he say, Father, forgive them? They don't know what they're doing. So when someone's yelling and screaming at you, someone's lying to you, someone's being unfaithful to you, I don't care what it is, because of the sin nature, they might purposely be doing something, but in the spiritual realm, that Adam nature is the thing that's ruling and you need to be their prayer cover that God nature would either come in there initially if it's not there, or start awakening and coming up. Because when the God nature is ruling, especially in partnerships, when the God nature is ruling in the husband and the God nature is ruling at the same time in the wife, yes, that's what God's talking about. Now, sometimes it's ruling in the husband, not the wife. Sometimes it's ruling in the wife, but not the husband. Those are the real tough times. And it is total annihilation when neither one of them has the Spirit of God ruling, and it's the natural nature that is involved. So constantly be prayerful for each other. Read those scriptures to each other, with each other. Read them aloud. Get your house full. I'm alone. So I have for a long time read, I read my scriptures out loud. So I picture the words plastered all over the walls of my house, the ceiling and the floor. I picture the Word of God just soaking every single portion of the property. And so many people that I've allowed to stay at my house, one of the first things they say is, there's such a peace here. Yeah. Because it's covered with God's Word. It is anointed. Now, if I was out there yelling, screaming, carrying on, doing all sorts of stuff, I'd rather be shouting the words of God and shouting His praise and having that what is more than my failing days, have my success days more than my failing days. And God does that. Now, why is humility in there with those other awesome things, the compassion and kindness and all that stuff? If these instructions about the compassion and kindness, the gentleness, patience, and etc., if the humility wasn't in there, we'd become our own God. Who's not going to compassion on you, and I do this, and I do that. We would be ruling it. We have to be saying, I'm not in charge. I am not the boss. I am not in charge. I am not the boss. I'm not the boss of myself. And also, I'm not the boss of you. Sometimes people say, why don't you go tell them whatever? I said, I will when God tells me what to say, and if He gives me permission to say it. Now, it doesn't mean you don't, you know, in safety, it doesn't mean you don't correct someone, you know, your kid's going to jump off the bridge. Might be not a good idea, don't jump off the bridge. I'm not talking about that. You understand what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those issues of life and having the Spirit of God rule. The gifts that God has spread throughout the world wouldn't be realized as coming from God. So those who seek God, one of the hugest things that He works in us is this humility. Because there's already enough people that are their own gods. Adam and Eve were their own gods. They just said God told them what to do, and they go, well, He doesn't really mean that. And we do that. When we put ourselves above God when we decide what He means. We have to humble ourselves before the mighty God and ask Him, God, show me, teach me, I want. And if I don't have a teachable spirit, give me a teachable spirit. Those things. Now, you know, if you pray for a trip to the Caribbean, I don't know, you might get it, you might not. But you pray for teachable spirit, man, you got it. Mm-hmm. You pray for this stuff, this is the stuff. This is the will of God. You pray the will of God, you have it. That's what we need. Set your affections on things above, not on things of the earth. They'll come, all that stuff will come in due time. I said the other day, it was so amazing. I didn't get anything I prayed for, but I have everything I ever, ever, ever wanted or need. And I go, it's absolutely amazing. I'm full. I'm happy. And I didn't get what I thought the framework of my life was going to be. I go, you're absolutely amazing. So I can with confidence say, you seek God. He knows what He's doing. Let Him have His way with you. Now, so many in Hollywood, in the arts business and science, etc., they've given their gifts over to lust and to bribery and demonic ideas. And some of these movies that are coming out, I mean, if that isn't a picture of hell, they think it's a creative ability. Good grief. They're into drugs and pornography and adultery and sodomy. They've given themselves over to the perverse things of life. That adversary is greatly going to oblige that gift of theirs, and they're going to come out with this stuff thinking, oh, this is just so artistic. That's so demonic. And they don't even know. Lost souls. I'm still praying for many, many people in Hollywood, those people that keep praying for, God, please show them. Now, the minute they give their hearts to you, they're going to be out of their business. Ain't no one going to have them around, but you guide them. You guard them. Some of them might be able to be a big mouthpiece to be able to share some of those things. But usually when they do that, they soon disappear. They're gone. But those talented singers and songwriters and authors and artists, etc., those things, if those gifts are used for the glory of God, how things would turn around. But I'm not concerned about them. I just want to tell this to me and to you. We are hearing it, we are knowing it, and we can do it. The devil is slick, though. If he can get you caught up in pride, then those gifts can be perverted, just like that list that I just gave, and used against you and against God. But we'll grow in strength and holiness. And in His light, because it's a dark world here. And in 1 Peter chapter 5, 1 Peter 5, the last portion of the 5th verse and the 6th, and it says, and all of you, again a verb, clothe yourselves with humility toward one another. whoa, now he's starting to clarify. You be humble in terms of your gifts. Now be humble toward one another. God's opposed to the proud. Well, that ought to give us a big sign and go, oh, I wanted to have it to happen. But he gives grace to the humble. You'll have what you need. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time. Don't worry about your gifts exalting you or being known or anything else. We've worked diligently here for years and years at this little church. And many, many people have come through. God has trained them. God has saved them first, given them the foundation in him, strengthened them, and then they go. They're in New York. They're in Pennsylvania. They're up in McIntosh. They're over in the southern part of Florida. They're in California. They're up in Massachusetts. It's like, could we have them stay a little, Lord? And he goes, this is like the emergency room. He told us this church is like the emergency room. People don't stay in the emergency room. They come, they get sick, and they go back out their life. That's what every Christian should be. You should be doing this with your family, with your relatives, with your neighbors. You should be the steadfast example. Now, God has called some of us to preach. God has called some of us into pastoring and being an evangelist and all of these things. He's called us into what the world might call a job description, but every single one of us are ministers. Every single one of us are servants. Every single one of us are supposed to be living the gospel and sharing it. What's it? Share the gospel every single day, and some days use words. Yeah. It's so powerful. Mm-hmm. In your family unit first, extend it out into your job, extend it out into your community, and that will spread. Even though things look really dark and stuff like this right now, your area of responsibility, are you military people? You both?
I work with DOD and,
oh, okay.
And for DOD.
Okay, but were you in the military?
Yes. That's up
I say, okay, there you go. We got some. So you're AOR, you understand what I'm talking about.
AOR.
When you have your area of responsibility, you fill it with the Spirit of God. You fill it with the presence of God. You call it down His grace, His forgiveness. You dedicate your gifts and your children's gifts to the Lord. And tell them that. Let them know that. Pray with them. Pray for them. So many people, they get up, boom, out the door, everyone's gone in their separate directions. Don't do that. If you can't do it in the morning, then do it at night. Carry them to bed, put them in, lay God's blessing on them. Those that do that have the most successful. And if you didn't do that, your kids are all grown, you can start being their prayer warriors right now. God says, I don't care when you start, honey, because I'm going to finish. Just get him involved. Now, the leadership team in this ministry has been in the humbling machine for a long time, one way or the other, various circumstances that God has orchestrated over the years so that we can see what we really are: dogmatic, overbearing, unfaithful, stupid, prideful, impatient, stubborn, egotistical. And that's just me. You want to get to know the rest of the team. JK. Okay. You get the point, though. God has been working on humbling us through going through relational struggles. He's not punishing you. Someone's not worse off. And then someone, when is he going to change? When is she going to change? God is using relational struggles because they are the most intimate and closest. As hot and as hard as that is, they have the deepest, most profound effect when it comes out the God way. He humbles us with financial challenges, with health challenges. Shall go. No name, no clothes. Jeez Louise. That's another story we'll tell you a little later. Working out differences of opinion. Some of our leadership board meetings, I tell you, some of them have been a little testy. But there's always been forgiveness. It's always ended up with the right way before God, where even though we're testy with each other, and just because you're on a leadership team doesn't mean you're the holy, holy. You know what I'm saying? The only difference between me and you, and I've said this many times, or however many times, is that I'm standing and you're sitting. I have the same nature. I have the same struggles. I have the same things. I have the same opportunity to decide to do it right or wrong. And I have to go through my struggles, but I'm forgiven. And so are you. And that's the big difference that you have to understand. Now, this humbling that God has us go through, it's not a religious ideation. This is relational with Him. If you get this straight, going up and down vertical, everything on the horizontal is going to work out so much better. And everyone is here trying to work on the horizontal first. Everything that's on the plane that they're living on, they try and get all of that straightened out first. Don't do that. Get your relationship with God straightened out first. Have purity and power and authority and holiness and wisdom and truth that fill you so it's bursting out of your eyeballs. You won't be fighting. You won't be doing some of the things that we do. Newsflash, the end result is still not the end result because it's a work in progress. We're going to die a work in progress. No one gets to the point of perfection. The only one perfect is Jesus. No one is righteous. No, not one. We're forgiven. We have His righteousness on us, but every single day you have a choice to have the Adam nature rule, which is sin, or the God nature rule, which is not. Led by the Spirit, you will not sin because the Spirit cannot sin. Absolutely amazing. God's opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And I see tremendous changes in our team and in our people and those that that come here. And I see a gentleness coming. I mean, we've had more and more gentleness. I mean, even some of our couples are talking about that, a gentleness. And I tell you, I'm going to point you out, Ted, this really touched my heart. A while ago, he was sitting back there, and Carolyn was sitting in front of him, and he just put a hand on her, and he was weeping and just saying, I am so grateful for my wife because she stayed with me when I was such a stupid jerk. Right there in front of the assembly. Now that is what God calls humility. He was not the boss anymore, his life or her life. God was his boss, truly, in that moment. Feels good to have a perfect husband, doesn't it, North Carolina? Yeah, there you go. But this compassion and this kindness, you sit down really and have a good, close talk with any of the couples here. They will tell you, even though it's been a struggle for everyone, and Mark and Shirley are not exempt from any of this. You sit down and go through all that stuff. Just because they are, he's the senior pastor and his wife, and we as a team, the three of us, have been here the longest in terms of the leadership team. I've been here since 1977. Good grief. Mm-hmm. I mean, I packed up and run away so many times, but I never go any further than the front door. God has me here. You have to give up what you want. You don't go after your dream. You go after His dream. He'll give you your dream. Everything, it just doesn't work. He does not think like we think. He does not work like we work. Stay humble. Stay humble. And the unique and wonderful things that God has done in us and with those unique and wonderful gifts that will make us stronger and better to bring in a harvest of souls. It's not to build you up. It's not to build up anyone's singing or anyone's preaching or anyone's healing or praying or anything, whatever God has there. It's not to build you up. It's to build Him up. It's all for Him. So if you want your life to change, you have to change your life. Period. Say that with me. If you want your life to change, you have to change your life. You got to give it over. And in Proverbs, we'll finish up. Proverbs 15:33, the last portion of that. And before honor comes humility. Wow. Guys, you want to be honored by your wives? It's going to take some humility on your part. Your wives come with gifts from God, and those gifts are different than yours. And sometimes they're better. Humility will recognize that and thanks God for it and seeks His will and wisdom on how to incorporate it into your lives. You want a better wife? Then be a humble husband. And it's vice versa. Everything I just said for the husband, it's the same thing for the wives. It starts with you. And another newsflash. Big one here. If you're humble, you can't be offended. If you're humble, you can't be offended. So that's the signal. God's trying to give us some training here. If you're all offended, that means you're sitting in something hurt your pride. Something hurt something. You thought you were better than that. You thought you knew. You thought you did. You thought you were. Whatever it is, you thought. When you are offended, God says right there, that's the Adam nature. Because he is the example. He was never offended. Now he has wrath. He has gifts. He has treasures. He's the fullness of all of that, but it's always perfectly just. It's never a knee-jerk reaction based on sin. If you're humble, you can't be offended. Not by your wife, your husband, your family, your close associates, your friends, or anything. If you know by God's Spirit, not your own assessment, who you really are in Christ, then someone else's opinion can't override the opinion God has of you. Chosen, holy, beloved. Things in the past have beat us down. God says, that was the past and that was sin. That has nothing to do with me. You are chosen, you are holy, you are beloved. So put away your reaction to rejection and objection. I'm not going to go around and call everybody on a one-month schedule and go, hey, how's it going with your humility? How's it going? That's your business with God. I am just telling you what God has said for us to do. Caution, though, I'm not talking about blocking out the comments of people who God may have correcting you. Just don't have this heart offended. If you are, you're not humble. But there could be some correction needed. Sometimes he does tell us to correct one another. But it can't be our correction. And it's far too much. It's like 99% we are correcting one another because we don't like what they said. We don't like what they did. We don't think it matches up with what God said. God isn't talking about that. When God touches you by his Spirit to say something, that correction is going to go into the heart. Otherwise, your words are just falling to the floor. And in Proverbs 15, 31, 32, he whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof. Did you ever see the word reproof with that describer before? Life-giving reproof. Look how God speaks to us. He whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. He who neglects discipline despises himself, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding. And this is the corker now. Proverbs 16:5. Everyone who is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Whoa. That ups the ante for me to really work on this. Assuredly, he will not be unpunished. And in Proverbs 16:18-19, we've heard this one before. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. So be really careful. That to me is screaming out bad decisions. That to me is screaming out poor relational issues. All these things. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It's better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. So the next time you think you're hot stuff, or that you're some holy son of a gun, think again. You could have been the one that you're scoffing, condemning, writing off. Be really, really careful. There, but for the grace of God, go on. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time. God bless you always.